This is Forum. I'm John Michaels, Public Affairs Radio Director. We're going to be talking with former Senate Larry Pressler. Tell us, Larry, I think first, were you in the House and then the Senate?
Yes, that's correct. I served in the United States House from South Dakota, January 3rd of 1975 until January 3rd, 79, and I was then sworn into the U.S. Senate, where I served for 18 years until January 3rd, 1997. So I had 22 years in Congress, and I'm very grateful. I was surprised that the people of South Dakota elected me, and I pinch myself sometimes that I was given 22 years in Congress. I worked very hard, especially on aviation matters and other things, and trying to solve some of the problems South Dakotans have in the Chicago and Minneapolis airports, but they've come back just as big. But I worked very hard for South Dakota during those years.
Well, we remember KISD AM, which is now our sports station, KWSN 1230, back, I think, was it mid-70s? And you came in as a Rhodes Scholar with a you wore a sweater, and you ran against a longtime politician, Denholm, who was, I think, a former sheriff, wore cowboy boots.
Yep.
But those were different days, weren't they?
Well, yes, and my opponent was a fine man, Frank Denholm. The problem with politics is you have to beat somebody to get in, and I didn't really. But I ran a positive campaign, and I remember one of my very first interviews, if not my first interview, was with you, and we're both still kicking around. And I salute you for your long service in radio in South Dakota.
Well, actually, part of your term, you had a big effect on radio with the part of the deregulation. You were that committee.
Well, yes, I didn't agree with everything in that bill, and yes, I was very active I was chairman of the Commerce, Science, and Transportation Committee, and I worked very hard on a number of things. I didn't agree with some of those deregulation bills, but one of the problems that we still have, I did fight hard and always did. I had a meeting every year with the airlines. I think South Dakota passengers are treated terribly when they come through Chicago, Minneapolis, and on to Sioux Falls. And we used to jawbone them and say, we'll help you with your international routes if you'll have better equipment and bigger equipment and better rates for people flying into Sioux Falls, because now that service has deteriorated, and people are really treated badly, South Dakota Air passengers, when they transfer to their flight to Sioux Falls.
Well, you're an international traveler. You've been abroad, and I know you've done a lot with education and even voting issues during your time.
Yes, since leaving the Senate, I've been mostly a college professor. That's been the principal thing that has kept me going. And I've taught internationally overseas a lot. I was a professor in India for a while, and I was a professor in France, Italy, and also in China for a while, and in England. I have given several lectures, and I'm scheduled to be a Fulbright professor in Manila next January and February. But my heart's always been in South Dakota. I've kept up my South Dakota ties. I'm on the board of I'm at the board of the South Dakota Farmers Union, and I was a trustee at the University of South Dakota, and I've taught at three South Dakota universities, two Native American universities, and I did some lecturing at the University of Sioux Falls also.
Well, your hometown was it Hartford?
Humboldt, the great town of Humboldt. Yeah. We just there last night. Humboldt is a small town in western Minnehaha County, and I was in 4-H, grew up on a farm, and did all these things. And but I'm a Vietnam veteran also. That's another thing I'm very proud of. I served two tours of combat duty, actually, in Vietnam. And as a result of that, I'm very opposed to our involvement overseas. I think we should bring our troops home from overseas. I think we should stop giving away all this money we give away around the world, because we're just flushing it down a toilet, actually. For example, in Egypt, we give at least $1.8 billion a year, plus we've given hundreds of billions of dollars. That's B, not M. And nobody in Egypt likes us, and the rich people have gotten the money, and the military has gotten the money. And I just feel so sorry for South Dakota taxpayers. So one thing that I am is that I'm on this committee, and we're trying to reduce the deficit, but we could reduce it by stopping spending so much money on these foreign military interventions. For example, now we're ready to go get involved in Syria somehow. We should not do that. I actually voted for Barack Obama. I'm a Republican, but I was hoping that he would get us out of all these foreign wars and foreign involvements. And I think the military-industrial state is so strong that he's been forced, or he somehow, nothing has changed. And we keep making these commitments. In Afghanistan, we just made new commitments for billions of dollars, even though we say we're pulling out. But all this aid, it just goes to the very wealthy. I've seen it firsthand. I've taught abroad. I've lived abroad these last few years, and I feel passionately that the United States should stop doing this to relieve our taxpayers and to get the deficit down.
Well, you and I both remember Dwight D. Eisenhower, when he was president, said the same thing. He said, yes. Beware of the military complex.
Yes, we haven't listened to President Eisenhower. Our military-industrial homeland security state is necessary to a point. We've got to defend ourselves. But sending troops, as I was, and I can say this because I'm a Vietnam, I went abroad. I was part of boots on the ground in Vietnam, and it was a lost war, a losing cause. Then we lost the war in Iraq. I don't care how you slice it. And I think we've lost the war in Afghanistan. But we could have gone after Osama bin Laden without sending all those troops over there. My point is we've got the technology with our Navy, and with certain technologies, the sending of U.S. soldiers, having U.S. soldiers still stationed in Italy. We have over 40 military installations in Italy, and I taught over there at the University of Bologna, and I saw it firsthand. And those countries just sort of laugh at us because they love to have the stimulation of their economy. Then in Germany, we probably should have one or two bases, but we don't need all those bases in Germany. World War II was over in 1945, I believe, and we're still fighting it.
Well, Larry, the aspect of the military, the president today, I think he's very leery of being drawn into Syria and Egypt right now. We have to be very careful that we don't get pulled into that.
Well, that's right. And of course, now both of our political parties, and I'll criticize my own party, the Republican Party, more. We're a creature of the military-industrial state. They get all the money for the campaigns, directly or indirectly, from the military-industrial state, a lot of it. And so, and the same thing is true of the presidential candidates. So before they run, before they can run, they have to be pledged to continue all of this. And that's why there's a new independent senator from the state of Maine and one from Vermont. Maybe it's time for a new party or for independents to run for the United States Senate and for the presidency. And I just think that South Dakota, I've been urging some people to run as an independent so they're free of that of those party commitments, and they can go into the United States Senate or into the whatever there or here and not be so burdened down by the two parties, which and I would say my own Republican Party is very much a part of that. Our deficits have actually been higher under Republican presidents, and the Republican congressional spending has been higher because Republicans tend to support military spending, and they will not raise taxes, and they support the corporate structure, the corporate subsidies. And this has resulted in really higher deficits under Republican Congresses and Republican presidents. I just this morning looked on the internet, if you go to deficits by the year, they're higher under Republican presidents because Republicans tend to vote for more military spending without question, and that has caused us a problem. I'm not picking on the Republican Party, but and I still am a registered Republican, but I'm very disappointed that the two parties are both locked in this. Anybody they nominate has to be locked into this. And anybody that's nominated for president, I didn't realize. I was hoping Barack Obama would break out of this, but he hasn't been able to.
Speaking with a former senator in House, 22 years, you say, Larry Pressler.
Yes.
And, you know, South Dakota's got some history with independence. We, I think our own Senator Pettigrew was populist party, and there was the Grange and a few others in our history.
Yes, the Dakotas and Minnesota had some and I may say the name, Farmers Independent Parties. Minnesota, the DFL calls itself Democratic Farm Labor, and the Republican in Minnesota call themselves, or used to call themselves IRs, Independent Republicans. So there is a tradition of independence, and it's possible that South Dakota might well elect an independent senator. We also have this tradition lately of sort of uncontested or almost uncontested Senate races where the parties sort of decide who's going to run, and it's almost preordained. And I think, and I've been going across, I go across the state quite a bit, and even though I've been abroad teaching, I also am trying to finish two small books on South Dakota. One is going to be a little bit about my career, and I've also written a book on the senators from South Dakota. I'm going to update that. So I talked to some people across the state, and there are some good people out there that should run for the Senate as an independent this time. I think the time is ripe.
Have you ever thought of getting back into politics yourself?
Well, I think people would say that I'm a little old, although I'm a young 71. I'm at this stage, I'm urging somebody else to run, and I feel good. That may be a possibility, but at this time, I think we need to find an independent to run for the Senate in South Dakota.
Well, I remember reading where you were conducting, being a judge of making sure the ballots were correct in certain elections in other countries, and I think you were teaching democracy when you were in India and Germany and those places too, right?
Yes, and I went with former President Jimmy Carter to Nicaragua, and I went to Ukraine judging elections and ballots, and we've also, but this business of our spending a lot of money trying to make other countries democracies, well, first of all, that just doesn't work if we try to do it with soldiers, because the barrel to send a soldier to a foreign country where he doesn't speak the language with a rifle and tell him to teach people about democracy, that's just absurd. It's very expensive, but I worry about our taxpayers. You know, nobody thinks about the taxpayers, and the taxpayers in America of all races. It's not a racial thing. It's not a Republican Democratic thing. We're a very highly taxed people because we spend so much money on these military operations abroad. These things cost billions of dollars. Those are B's, not M's.
You worked a lot when you were in Congress for 22 years, and what do you think of and you're on the board of a farm group now, but the farm bill itself has been kind of bogged down with so many different things about it.
Well, the farm bill is another example. There were occasions when I voted against the farm bill because it's got so much stuff in it, like it's got subsidies for sugar in there. It used to have tobacco subsidies. This is the problem. Our people cannot expect subsidies anymore. Now, if we could move agriculture, if we take care of the international trade aspects of international and give our farmers and ranchers a fair chance in international trade, the prices are now high enough that they don't need price supports. Now, the proposal was to give them some kind of insurance, but I think farmers can buy that insurance themselves in many cases. And that's one example of, but who really gets the money out of the farm bill are corporate agriculture, agribusiness, and they're the ones who really push it. I mean, the fertilizer companies, the machinery companies, the seed companies, and I bless them, but the farmer is sort of a pass-through. And so that's an example of a corporate subsidy, and that Republicans and Democrats both support or have supported. And I think that in some ways, the defeat of the farm bill might well be a good thing for agriculture in South Dakota, because a lot of that didn't go to South Dakota farmers. It went to agribusiness and to what's the name of the big plant in, but I can't remember it right now. But there are several major agribusiness places that get a lot of this money, and that just shouldn't be, because that's taxpayer money, and they have to be very careful with that. So some of those corporate subsidies, now every other industry also gets subsidies. The airline industry gets subsidies, you name it. There are so many corporate subsidies and so many corporate tax breaks, and that's where I part company with some of my Republican Party philosophy, in that the Republican Party should be for the small businessman, for the small taxpayer, and for individual initiative at the local level.
Speaking with Larry Pressler, as a historian yourself, I think you know that if you look through history, none of the governments of any kind, whether Rome or Egypt, they seem to have a 300-year cycle where there would then be a regeneration or revolution, because mainly of over-regulation, over-taxation, are we kind of, you know, we're getting close to that, not too far away from that right now.
Yes, I think that's right. We're coming to a point where our democracy is, it needs to be recharged. By the way, it was Duane Andreas company that I was trying to think of that gets the big agricultural subsidies, and he's not a farmer. He was not a farmer. He's, but that's right. Our democracy has reached a stage of stagnation almost, and we've got to really have a revival of interest. The public has become very apathetic. And I'll blame part of this on the public also. It's I can blame it on Republicans and Democrats and on Congress. But the public has got to be interested, and they've got to ask questions and listen to the radio and TV and get the news as much as they can, and also dig in a little bit, dig beyond, get in that computer and dig out some of the facts. But we need it's almost like a revival of interest in democracy so that we can move forward. Because our country has and morally we're compromised in our business leaders and in Congress. Ethically, we don't even teach ethics from a point of view of really trying to get everybody to do what's right as best they can. Although it's not always clear what's right, but the point is, ethically and morally, our democracy is stagnating, and we've got to get a restart.
Many people thought the teapot and the other, you know, kind of, but when they get in Congress, they find that they really can't do anything.
Well, that's because the two parties are so locked in, are so much in control, and that's why electing some more independents. Now, an independent was elected to the Senate from Maine, Angus King, Senator Angus King. An independent was elected from Vermont. They are able to join either caucus or work with either caucus, but they're not controlled by the military-industrial state quite so much. And I can say this as a Vietnam veteran. I'm not criticizing the military per se, and I'm not saying that we don't have to do some things overseas, and I'm not saying that I'm not grateful for the freedoms that we have. We still have a great country, but we have to preserve that country by changing our priorities and spending less money abroad, especially in terms of sending troops and arms and getting tangled up. You know, we're celebrating the Battle of Gettysburg this year. The British thought of entering our Civil War on the part of the South. If the British, and the French did too, if they had entered on the part of the South, we'd probably still be fighting the Civil War today. And societies go through, and human beings are such that in countries, they go through civil wars. They just do. It's historically true. And it's, I'm sorry that they do, but they can usually not be solved by people from outside. What's happened in the Middle East over the years is they've had civil wars, but countries from all over the world put their fingers into it, and we're still fighting.
Well, the issue with airlines, this is a personal issue for you. Can you give me some examples of what you
feel? Yes. I thank you very much. And I have felt strongly that South Dakota is now being treated badly by the airlines because nobody's watching them. When I was in Congress, we used to have a weekly meeting of our delegation, and we would talk to different companies and different people. Now, a senator from South Dakota, it isn't just getting federal money for South Dakota. It's also fighting for South Dakota. Sometimes fighting, you don't slug somebody, but you have meetings. But I used to tell the airlines that I'll help you with some of your international routes and other things. But I want my passengers, my South Dakotans, when they come through Chicago or Minneapolis, to have fares that are fair, using that term in two ways, to not have all this old equipment. They put their oldest airplanes and smallest airplanes on from Chicago to Minneapolis into Sioux Falls. And number three, they collapse flights together and then tell the passengers that there's a mechanical and all this kind of stuff. So every flight that flies in. Now, that's very profitable. Those short lines actually have become the most profitable part of airlines. And they use newer equipment in upstate New York. I've traveled all over the world. I know what's going on. And just our congressional delegation has not fought for good airline service for South Dakota. The late Carol Hillard said almost the day I left the Senate, the airline service to Sioux Falls got much worse in terms of when you transfer in Chicago or when you transfer in Minneapolis. bags are late, flights are rates are exorbitantly high, but nobody's watching and nobody complains about it. That's what. So I'm trying to find somebody to run for the Senate as an independent who would really fight for South Dakota insofar as airline service. That's one thing that I've just noticed that needs to be done.
I'm still trying to figure out why the price of gas goes up and down so much.
That I can't. I'm not an expert on that, but I think that's probably manipulated also.
Well, the airlines. What do you think people can do? They can notify their officials, but it's been deregulated. Well, we're going to have to go back to maybe doing some regulation.
Well, that may well be. We may need some new legislation, our delegation can let the airlines know that they are watching and that they, when the airlines come to Congress for help in other ways, the airlines may be deregulated to a certain extent, but they still want things from Congress. They still want things elsewhere. And some changes had to come. But I think the average person should tell their congressional delegate that they expect to hear that they're having meetings with the airlines and that they're complaining about this and so forth.
Well, you were a Rhodes Scholar. What can you say to the kids in high school today? These are the people that are going to be making the changes, really.
Well, I'm going back to a reunion of Rhodes Scholars in Oxford. For those people who don't know, a Rhodes Scholar, I went to the University of South Dakota, and I had the opportunity then to do graduate work. You win a Rhodes Scholarship, and you can go to Oxford in England. And it's a kind of a big deal academically, I guess, although there are lots of other, I always say somebody who goes to vocational school might be doing just as much for their country. It's not an end-all, be-all, but it was a privilege to study and to get my certificate at Oxford University, and it'll be fun in September. Harriet and I, my wife, are going over to Oxford for a 3-day international reunion. There are Rhodes Scholars from many different countries, so it isn't just the United States.
Well, I don't know, for you, education never ends.
Well, that's right, and I enjoy learning, and learning is fun for me. And I just have read a couple of street signs that have been put up here in downtown Sioux Falls, and I get here fairly often. I get to my hometown of Humboldt, and I get out to the West River when I come back from some of my teaching assignments. And South Dakota has got a rich history, and I enjoy learning about it. And I'm going to update. I wrote a book that has been published on South Dakota's 23 senators. We've now had 25, and I'm going to update that book and here in the next year or two.
What, I think a lot of people, and right now the president is probably thinking of his legacy. But you put 22 years in. What is it you're proudest of?
Well, after 22 years, what was
it? What are you proudest of?
All right. Well, I'm proud that I fought hard for the people of South Dakota when I was there. I'm proud that I tried to oppose some of this military spending overseas. I'm proud that I served as the very best I could. I gave every ounce of energy to it. And I'm proud of the people of South Dakota, how they have come along. This is a... we have a lot of problems in South Dakota with weather and with uncertain crops and so forth, but we have a pretty hardy people, and I think we have the best people in the world here. And so I guess I'm proud that I was a small part of that.
Well, you and Tom Brokaw were kind of in parallel.
That's right. Tom Brokaw, believe it or not, was 2 years older than I, and at the University of South Dakota, and Meredith, his wife, was there. I didn't know them well, but I knew them, and I've kept in touch and admire. Of course, he's now considered, I believe, one of the greatest journalists in history, from what I've read. And because he started out in radio, I believe, at WNAX, and I believe maybe Jerry Oster is still down there. Is he?
I'm not sure about that.
I shouldn't mention the competition, should I? But anyway, I think that's where Tom Brokaw started.
I think Tom was a University of South Dakota student.
Yes, yeah.
Now, again, going back to the young people, again, this is where, you talk about things that need to be done. It's not different. They're in high school right now, and they're looking at college as really a burden of debt.
That's right. It's really not a fair thing that people have to spend $100,000 in debt. I have some relatives one in particular, my niece, who has gone into substantial debt, and I worry about them. And because college doesn't have to cost that much. I teach in colleges abroad, and they don't have such big buildings. They have small classrooms. They don't have big, high-salaried administrators. They don't have these huge multi, these big football and sport things that cost so much to the university. They have old-fashioned basic education where you come to class, and I had 23 students in my last class over at Sciences Po in Paris, and we had a room that was it just held 23 students, and there wasn't. I go to most of these state universities across the country, and they have all these elaborate big buildings, and they're paying their president $1 million a year, and all this nonsense. So we've got to get higher education back to the basics.
And if they want to be a senator or congressman like you, be a public servant. The word public servant really should be, but isn't.
No, it is not. I have a very hard, I try to urge my students to do public service, either as a elected person or as an administrator or a city official or whatever. And I don't get a very good response because, especially people, young people don't want to run for office because they have to be a Republican or a Democrat. They have to be get on the extremes of politics, liberal or conservative. The moderate centrist is gone, and there's all this negative ads, and the average person who has other options just won't do that, and so that is unfortunate.
Really, if people are smart, they don't run for office.
Well, that's right. That's right. We've lost a whole generation of good political leaders because of this this terrible atmosphere that we have in Washington, and it needs to be, and that's why I think that maybe we need a new party or more independents running.
I think most everyone in Congress are at least millionaires. We've got quite a few billionaires now. Is that really representative of our
population? Well, yes, but you can barely run for office. I was able to run for office on a low-budget campaign, and I never raised large amounts of money. I was very lucky I got by in those days, in the 70s and 80s. And but things changed in the 90s, and it's very hard to it just costs so much to run for office, and it's almost predetermined who's going to win most of these Senate races now a year or two in advance, and that should not be.
Well, you benefited from being in the service. Do you recommend that for maybe a route for some people?
Well, I think it's very good for young people, women and men, to serve. Actually, I'm for going back to a universal draft for public service. That's another thing I believe in, and I think that we're going to need a certain amount of young people and kind of a domestic peace corps to clean up our streets and streams, to do public service, to help take care of the elderly in nursing homes as the baby boom generation comes into nursing homes. We have the manpower needs are not explained. They are not how we're going to meet the manpower. And I say there should be a universal draft, which there's no escape for rich kids or
like they have in Israel.
Yes, something like that. And we also need to get it could bring down some of the spending that we are doing. And also it would change our foreign policy, because if everyone's kid had the same chance of being sent into a foreign wars, we would not be getting into these foreign wars.
Well, Larry Pressler, people want to contact you. How can they reach you? Do you have a web address? Or?
Yes, I do have a website. My email is lpressler@larrypressler.com, and I have a website at just LarryPressler.com, SenatorLarryPressler.com, and it's got my email, and it's even got my phone number, unfortunately, there. So,
well, that's what I'm saying. If people are listening and they feel like maybe you struck a chord with them, they can contact you. And
sure.
You know, see if we can generate some interest in your views. Former Senator, Congressman, 22 years, Larry Pressler. Very much want to thank you for being with us on Forum.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much.